Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, Crimelanders. Thank you so much for tuning in again today. We have the brilliant Grace Mulvey. Great Grace Mulvey, as she's called on the circuit. Grace Mulvey is a fantastic comedian. Do check her out on Twitter and Instagram. It's Grace Mulvey Comedy. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode today. If you have enjoyed the episode, I would really appreciate it if you could rate, review and subscribe wherever you listen to your pods. And also, I know I have been talking about this the last couple of weeks since we've come back with season three, but I don't actually earn any money from the podcast, bar the donations I get on Patreon. I'm trying to get to 100 patrons just to cover the cost of doing the podcast because I really enjoy it. I love the response that Crimeland gets. I am trying to get through. I know quite a few people have sent me really lovely messages the last couple of weeks. So I'm trying to get back to everyone. I mean, that's not to say, you know, I'm not at blind boy level of thousands of DMs. I'm sure he has a much busier inbox than me, but I am really trying to get back to everyone because it does mean so much when people get in touch and say they enjoy the podcast. But if you would like to support us for the price of a coffee, $3.50 a month, you get extra content. You get, oh, there's poor old Ted. I will have to go now because my two-year-old is not happy that I'm doing an intro to the podcast. He is with his dad. Don't worry. He is currently accompanied, but I'm going to have to bail, guys. But just to say, for $3.50 a month, you get the extra content, you get ad-free episodes, and you also get early access to episodes as well. And it just means that you are contributing towards the cost of the podcast. Not everyone could afford it right now. And if you can't, you can't. That is no worries at all. I'm sorry for asking because it is a bit cringe. But if you could spare the price of a coffee a month, it just makes such a difference. Thank you so much for listening to Crimeland. And without further ado, here's your episode. Enjoy. To Crimeland. My name is Julie J, and this week I'm joined by my old pal, absolutely love her, the brilliant
Grace Mulvey,
to talk about Madeleine Smith. Now, bit of a disclaimer, Madeleine Smith is not the victim in this case, but as is often the kind, I feel this is often what we're saying about these stories. She's not the victim, but I feel she's the most interesting part of the story. So therefore, okay, the title of this pod is Madeleine Smith. That's why we're focusing on Madeleine. How are you, Grace?
Can I just say, before you say I thought you were going to say Madeleine McCann there, right? And I was like,
stop.
You know, when you were overloaded with information on something, and that would be a case that I know too much about, to be
honest. Just, there's too many Reddit threads. Like, I feel like that, like, I kind of try to go for the alternative cases, because there are a certain amount of cases that, you know, people get in touch and they're like, you know, will you do X, Y, and Z? And I feel like they have been done so well that it's kind of hard for me to come along and give my two cents. And also, with the whole Madeleine McCann thing, I feel with the podcast now, I definitely prefer looking at historical true crime. Like, I find the recent stuff a little bit affecting. Like, even I was always a wonder more than yourself, Grace, for the old Netflix true crime documentaries. But a couple I tried to watch recently and I just thought to myself,
because they happened like yesterday. Absolutely not. I don't want to know about this.
Literally, like, we're talking about it. Like, even there was one... What is that one? A Mother's Love. Did you watch that one on Netflix?
No.
I have to check. Is it? But basically, I found it very strange because, like, we're talking about something that happened in, like, 2020. And then it turns out that I felt we were kind of, hang on, I'm just going to honeymoon with my mother. No, that's definitely not in. A young man has stood up at the altar. His overprotective mother decides to join him on what had been his honeymoon. That was definitely not it. Okay, hang on.
Please, someone make a documentary about that. I would watch that. If that happened,
many
I would
issues.
Watch that.
Something about anyway, this what I'm saying is it was too recent. Like, we're talking about something that happened in 2020. We find out there's a criminal trial happening currently. You just think to yourself, what can we give it, not give it a beat?
But you know what? It's almost like, I don't know if you've seen this show, which they've now, like, Ryan Murphy has made into a big dramatized show, The Watcher.
And yes,
I haven't even watched it.
Have you watched it?
I haven't watched The Watcher, but I will watch The Watcher soon. But I, thank you, I've been working on that. But I read a review that someone was like, they don't even know who did it. It's been so recent. They actually,
Grace, thank you for saving me the time.
I want to know who did what when. Okay. And also, as a comedian, we're only allowed really make jokes about, like, the Titanic now, and it's been 100 years. So
even now, like, I do a whole bit about the famine, and people get a bit weird about it. I'm like, oh, stirring up some sad memories for some people. Like, it has been 170 years. You know, I'm not disputing that the famine didn't happen, but I do have a lot of questions. Like, we're an island. Could people eat fish? Like, I just have a lot. of questions.
But I
just feel that's why I'm actually going to change. I meant to do this week now, because we're coming back with season three, and I have 4 or 5 podcasts in the bag that I'm just going to put out so we don't miss a week. But I'm going to change the description on the podcast to historical true crime, because for me personally, I much prefer listening to something that's been historical. I just prefer talking about stuff that happened a while ago. When it's recent, it just gives me the ick.
No, when it's recent, it feels like karma that I'm like, I it's like the beginning of every film where I'm the over cocky kind of person, you know, being like, I don't care
that's
about
you,
the slasher,
Grace,
that's out there, and then I'm the first dead. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why I want it to be
and
way
to
in
be
the
fair
past.
That's, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's definitely your reputation on the scene. Everyone's like, I like Grace, but she's just a bit over cocky.
I like Grace, but she talks about murders that have just happened way too
much.
Like,
literally, you know, give it a beat. Like, the murder just happened a couple of days ago and she's doing material on it. You're like, that case is still open.
Ongoing, yes.
Exactly. Ongoing, Grace, please. Madeleine Smith. And now you've said Madeleine McCann, all I can think is Madeleine McCann.
Madeleine Smith
was her name. So Madeleine Smith was the first child of 5 kids in an upper middle class family in Glasgow. So this, we're talking 19th century here, Grace.
Okay.
So she was very well off, and her dad, James Smith, was a wealthy architect. Her mother, Elizabeth, was the daughter of another architect called David Hamilton, who apparently was kind of a big deal. So it seems to me like, you know, if your dad's an architect, you're going to kind of marry an architect. You know, people say you're going to marry your dad. So that seems to be true in this instance.
It's very sad that, like, the wife could never be the architect. You know, if you're an architect, you're going to marry someone whose dad was an architect. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's women not like, draw. I mean, you know, I mean, obviously women couldn't design buildings. Like, absolutely. No, I'd like, and even now I know this, maybe this is controversial. I don't know. I don't think women should be architects, Grace. That's just how I feel.
Because they get their periods.
Of course. There's going to be a week there where their mind is not going to be on the job.
Yeah.
They're just going to want to be at home with all a water bottle.
Exactly.
Think about the foundations. Think about the foundations. We need someone who's going to be on the job.
It's just a bunch of like smashed windows from period rage. That's what's going to be the building at the end of the day.
Wouldn't you love to smash a window? Have you ever done it?
I have, unintentionally.
Have you?
Yeah, I was reaching behind a couch one time to get a ball and leaned so hard in the couch it went through the window.
Oh my God, Grace.
Yeah, I was a fat kid. Anyway.
You poor thing. No, but that's just gravity though. If you leaned over a couch, I can totally see how that would go over. And
it was a double glazed window. It's meant to hold more.
Double like,
I was
very.
I was like, am I Iron Man? What the hell am I doing?
Oh my God. This is definitely the start of your X-Men origin story.
Exactly.
Going through a double glazed window. That is like so impressive.
Yeah.
Look, Elizabeth, she didn't get to design windows double glazed or otherwise. She just got to marry an architect. So she married this fellow called David Hamilton, and she had the five kids, and Madeline was the eldest. So Madeline was born at the family home on a Wellington Place in Glasgow in 1840. In 1855, the family moved from India Street to Blythewood Square, Glasgow, living in the lower half of the house, which was owned by David Hamilton's uncle. So David Hamilton owned this gaff. He was actually a yarn merchant. None of this is information you need to know, but just in case you were wondering. You had me in a yarn merchant. So the house stands at the crown of the major development led by William Harley, who was also like this big architect guy. And they were so wealthy, they also had a country property, this family, called Rowellin near Helensburgh. So these guys were really well regarded, very much upper echelons of Glasgow society. So Madeline would have been considered, I guess, you know, a bit of a catch, let's face it.
Yeah.
However, so Madeline kind of reached an age, she's a teenager, she's getting to that age where obviously people are talking about marriage and suitors and all the rest. And she very much really broke strict Victorian conventions of the time when, as a young woman in early 1855, she had this neighbor called Miss Mary Perry, who was kind of middle-aged, and she introduced Madeline to this guy called Pierre-Emile L'Angelier, who went by the name Emile. And she was friends with this guy Emile, and she was like, you have to meet this young neighbor I have, whose name is Madeline. I think he really hit it off. So she introduced them, and the pair really did hit it off. So much so that the sparks were flying the second these two people were introduced. Now, let me tell you about Emile. So Emile was the first of five children as well. He was born to French parents on the Channel Islands, which is a place that really fascinates me, the Channel Islands, in April of 1823.
Why does it fascinate you?
Well,
the most boring sounding island, I'm not going to lie.
Well, but you know, the fact it's like, you know, the whole France, England thing, like Channel Islands always got, like, you always hear of people swimming across the channel, but the fact that people live there just strikes me as fascinating.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, when I say fascinating, like not something we're going to dwell on, like I wrote one sentence on it. I know the way I'm like, I just find the Channel Islands fascinating. Tell me one fact about the Channel Islands, Judy. Nothing. Like there's no.
I didn't mean to call you out there, but as it's just the least interesting sounding island I've ever heard. And then you're like, the fascinating Channel Islands.
Just, you know yourself, Grace, so much going on. I mean, am I wrong? Is Jersey one of the Channel Islands? This is when people send me very.
Jersey.
Like, okay, Jersey is a place that interests me for sure. Because it's like got that kind of French feel, but it's still England. And Dawn Porter is from Jersey, and yes. I absolutely love her. So the reasonably interesting Channel Islands. He was 10 years older than Madeline. So Madeline had been born in 1833, and he was born in 1823. So he was 10 years older than her. His family had ran a seed merchant business out of their small house, and their business was confined to natives or French speakers. But his dad had wanted him to attract the business of wealthy English visitors who spent time, of course, on holidays on the islands, because they are so fascinating. With this goal in mind, Emile was sent to be an apprentice to a neighbouring nursery, as they call it, you know, kind of a garden or whatever, that catered to British clientele. After some initial uneasiness, Emile became a hard worker and enhanced the basic English he had learned at school, becoming quite fluent in both French and English. So he was kind of impressive in that way. Yeah. In 1842, as Emile was nearing the end of his apprenticeship, this guy from Scotland, his name was Sir Francis Mackenzie, which I think has to be like the most Scottish name ever, took a liking to him and offered to take him back to work on his Scottish estates. So the family said this would be a great way to attract even more business to the Channel Islands because they're so fascinating. And so Emile journeyed.
Why would they even need to attract business? People can't stop going. Well, to the incredible Channel
that is
Islands.
True. It's like, how do we improve on perfection?
This but place look, just sells itself. Do you know what I mean? Like, people are swimming the channels like get here.
You're getting such a sense of the islands with my crime land here. Like, just such a taste. So Emile journeyed to a nursery in Edinburgh for training in the plants of Scotland, which I'm sure is more interesting than it sounds. But look, whatever you're into yourself, would you be green fingered?
Me?
Yeah. That,
for some reason, sounded really dirty when you said it. And then I was like, excuse me. Green fingered? Absolutely not. No. The moment I thought about it. Also, like, I'm a millennial in a house here. I don't have a garden.
I know. Oh, yeah.
I have some plants. I will say this, because you know, like, now we're all obsessed with plants because we can't afford to have children. And we're like, oh, water the plants, talk to the plants. So I have heard apparently you should sing to your plants.
Haven't well, I think, do you remember, as he's now known amongst his mates, King Charles, back in the day when he used to talk about, like, it's funny because, like, Prince Charles, I remember the 90s, he used to be banging on about talking to his plants. And at the time, I was like, that's no way, that's no way to refer to your parents. Like, come on now, Charles. But, like, everyone thought he was mad. But sure, now we're all having full blown conversations with our cacti.
Oh my God, that is mad. He was well ahead of the time. Do you know what? He is the millennial of the royal family because everyone hates him. And I think that that's what a millennial is. He basically was doing stuff that millennials were doing, which is basically having terrible communication and relationships, but like talking to your plants.
Well, imagine like poor old Diana was just like, can you just break up with your girlfriend? And then he's going out talking dirty to his little sweet peas. You just be like, come on. Just give me an ounce of that love, please.
Yeah, I know.
Anytime I'm in the IKEA plant section, though, I lose the plant. Like, I'm an angel of death when it comes to plants. But when I hit up IKEA, I go full on. Do you remember Destiny's Child? I'm a survivor. I'm not going to give up. Yeah. Like, I just lose the run of myself entirely.
IKEA is just a place that makes you believe that you can be a different person.
Yeah, you're someone you're not.
But you're someone you're not. You're literally like, I'm going to make this bed. You're never making a fucking bed.
And you're like, I only need a capsule wardrobe.
Oh my God. Like, the amount of times I've gone around being like, oh my God, there's so many organizers here. I can organize my life. And I'm never using that. I'm never keeping a
capsule. And you're saying to yourself, I need a stationery organizer for all my pens to jot down all these amazing ideas.
And Judy, would you feel
Channel Islands, crime land.
Another crime land idea. There's definitely been a murder at an IKEA. I have to believe that someone has murdered their partner at an IKEA. You could do an incredible crime land about that.
Well, yeah, I think when you're at this till and somebody says, can I just run back for one thing? And you're just a salmon going against the tide. Like, I feel if you did kill someone in an IKEA, it wouldn't even, like, they wouldn't even try to do murder. It would just be straight up manslaughter, because like, you would immediately have that mitigating factor of it's IKEA.
Oh, I feel like the body would be like surrounded by Swedish meatballs that I'm after, like
those Swedish meatballs
shoving down someone's throat to stop them talking. I do think it's an endurance test for a couple's
life. Oh,
and if
very
you manage
tough.
To make it out both of you alive from IKEA, that's a celebration. You should be together forever.
That is, it's definitely, that should be a Netflix doc. Forget the ones where the mother goes on honeymoon with the gang.
A couple who have to like buy just some furniture for their house, and you follow them from the beginning to the end of IKEA. It would be
that
the best
would actually be a great show, wouldn't it? Like a couch, you go in there, all we want is a couch. But like, before you know it, you're like, who is he?
Yeah. And before you know it, he's turning to you and being like, you will kill that plant. And you're like, no, I'm going to kill you.
Oh,
you
yeah, no.
What I'm killing here is
the
you.
Cactus, the cactus is going to be fine. I mean, I think you're the one who should be sweating. So Emil is in Edinburgh. He's with the plants. He's having a great old time. And then Sir Francis died suddenly. And without enough money to return home because his boss has died, Emil was suddenly stranded in Edinburgh. Oh. So basically, he was in a bit of a precarious position, but the place he'd been working decided to keep him on. And over the next few years, Emil would continue to work as a nurseryman in Scotland, the Channel Islands and France. So he was doing reasonably well, but like still wasn't at like Madeline Smith's level of, you know, being high society kind of thing. So in 1852, he moved to Glasgow where he met Madeline. Now, they really hit it off when Mary Perry introduced them, had this real physical attraction to one another, so much so that they quickly embarked on an illicit love affair, which Madeline's family knew nothing about. Yeah,
Madeline slumming it with the poor. Slumming it
with the old nurseryman. We've all been there. So they started to meet in secret and they were both prolific letter writers. Their correspondence revealed like a really passionate and physical intimacy that obviously would have really shocked her family. But this was definitely a serious relationship and more than a flirtation. Madeline refers to herself as Emile's, quote, darling wife or Mimi L'Angier. And Emile presses her again and again to marry him. However, Madeline is really pragmatic about it and insists that like, as much as she's mad about him, her family would never condone a match between them. So sorry, Emile, that's just not like a runner. Like I'm into you. I'm into the plan talk, but like this can't be a fish. They would meet late at night and he would come to Madeline's bedroom windows, so like real Romeo and Juliet vibes. And on one of their meetings, she did actually lose her virginity to Emile, which was something they discussed in their letters to one another later on. But like they were very much, you know, there were real feelings there. Like there was real love there. So eventually Madeline acquiesced to Emile's repeated requests and agreed to marry him, but still hadn't informed her parents of the affair. So it was like a kind of a secret engagement. Like, I don't know how binding this engagement was, because it was like, we've all had the secret engagements, you know, where a guy's like, so we're getting married, but let's tell no one and make no preparations for it. So we're not going to tell anyone. We're not going to do anything for the wedding, but I just want you to know I'm marrying you.
Yeah.
When, where, I don't know. Like, we're not officially boyfriend, girlfriend just yet, but like, just,
you're not
allowed
to talk to me in public. You're not allowed to actually look me in the eye.
You know, are like shifting. Normal, yeah. Like, obviously, I'm shifting multiple people. I don't know about you, but like, we are marrying, just so you know. So it was that kind of, you know, loosey-goosey, bit of a nebulous engagement scenario. But because they were not aware of Emile, Madeline's parents had found a suitor for her who was, in their eyes, a very suitable match for her. So his name was William Harper Minnock. And
what kind of name is that? No offense.
I know, Minnock. It's an unusual Minnock one, isn't it?
That sounds like it's Irish. I know a Minnock from Offaly. Minnock. There's no absolute way. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
This guy sounds like an absolute, I don't know.
He might have been a chancellor, but he was a well-to-do businessman. He was very upper middle class in Glasgow. And in her parents' eyes, he was like the perfect match for their daughter. So when Madeline was kind of approached about this guy, initially she was like, oh. Then she went on a few dates with him. And obviously, as is the way in 19th century Glasgow, like two dates in, next thing you know, they're engaged. So it's kind of like the third date rule. But
it's like dating in your late 30s. It's like, listen.
Yes.
It's I like you. You like me. Let's go.
Fast forward. Like, you know, they mentioned I always say that with Fred, like our second date, he said something about his nephew. And I was like, I get it. You want to have kids with me. Like, okay. I've read that message loud and clear. Yep. So they did actually get engaged, and she's still in touch with Emile. So Madeline gets onto Emile and she says, look, I'm officially engaged now. Obviously our engagement was a bit pie in the sky, like wasn't a real thing as such. So I'm going to need the letters back that we've been sending one another.
Oh my God.
Yes. And she said in the letter, which I feel is real mic drop thing to say in a letter, I trust your honor as a gentleman that you will not reveal anything that may have passed between us. So she's like, look, it's been fun, but like, let's just leave things on good terms.
Emile, way, like, this day and age, it's like, you know, the screenshot's coming. That guy would be on Insta straight away.
For sure.
Messages screenshotted. That's what it is. I'm sorry, you wrote a letter. You're not getting those letters back, love. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I feel like it's the classic thing of once he writes someone a letter, that is actually their property then. Like, you've written the letter, but that's theirs. You know, like, I mean, we've all had many, many love letters in our time, Grace. Boxes and boxes. And like, if people came to me and said, Judy, can I have my love letters back? Do you know how long that would take me, Grace?
I have love emails.
Oh,
and they're really, it's really weird to be like, where do I store this?
And
it's like, it's a sub label.
Oh, that is lovely.
But at the same time, it's been years. And now I'm like, I just want to get rid of this because I have to now pay for extra storage on Google.
I mean, it's not worth $1.99 a month, but like
to what, subscribe to old email, love emails?
And then printing them off seems extreme.
Oh, print! Printing them off. I feel like I'm a stalker. I might as well make a scrapbook. Do you know what I mean? I have a piece of his hair in a scrapbook.
Oh, stop! I accidentally rang. You have these people in your phone from back in your single days, like Mark Tinder,
yeah,
Michal Tinder, and like I accidentally rang some Mark, but then it came up as Mark Tinder, and obviously I like nearly died. There was only a couple of rings. But then for the crack, I went into his WhatsApp picture and he's there with like, you know, he's a groom. He's on his wedding day, the wife, the bride, the white dress. You're like, my God, like this is just such a sign of how much time has passed. It's just kind of terrifying when you're just suddenly brought back to a place where, oh my God, I think the last time I clicked into this WhatsApp, it was like you with your Yorkie dog. And now here you are on your wedding day and you're still Mark Tinder my phone.
And also, Judy, you are married now. So now he thinks that's definitely you're having a breakdown in your marriage. And you're like, no, do you know what? I'm feeling the vibe. We were always meant to be together.
I'm feeling the vibe for sure. And I do think, you know, like, not that I, look, I'm not saying I would throw my family away, but it's nice to know you could, is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
So Emil, like, he gets back to this. He's not impressed. Now, I do think in his defense, like, as we've discussed, you know, you're not getting the love letters back, really. He said to her, he was kind of gave this kind of thinly veiled blackmail to her, saying, look, he would, this is where we kind of lose a bit of love for Emil, because like, this is just not cool. He's like, you know what?
It's a Channel Islands thing to do, I have to say. They're the type of people.
You know how I love the Channel Islands, but even by my standards, this is...
The men are problematic.
The men, like the landscape's fab, but like the men, it just, unfortunately lets them down. So he said, you know what? I will give you your letters. If you marry me, I'll give you your letters. And if you don't marry me, I'm going to give the letters to your father. So
this is like advice.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Can I just say historical revenge porn, essentially?
Oh, this is revenge porn.
Islands is what I'm going to call the Channel Islands from now on.
Like,
that's what
it was. I think I would prefer even like my father bringing a possession of a photo of me having sex rather than a letter where I'm describing having sex. Because then there's like, you know, your dad would be like, oh, I think there should be capital L in there. You know, but like he'd be definitely like looking at the grammar as well. Like, geez.
He'd be like, so, I think you meant to say engorged here.
Oh, no, like- stop. Oh, my God. I think there's, is there an E in gaping? Anyway, so there'd definitely be a whack of that. Emile then, so he's keeping a diary. So Madeline obviously freaks out and she's like, look, we'll meet up, we'll have a chat, please don't do anything hasty. So obviously this is Emile like being a dick in that like yeah. nobody wants their dad to see these letters. So Emile is like, okay, we'll meet up. So at the same time, he has this diary. So he's been keeping this diary. And in the diary, he starts to say that he's feeling unwell. And he says that he feels especially unwell after visiting Madeline in Glasgow. So he goes to meet her and he feels really unwell after meeting her. But he had said previously in the diary that he wasn't feeling well either. He confides to a number of friends that he believes he has been poisoned. He tells his mate, Miss Mary Perry. So he tells Mary, I can't think what, quote, I can't think why I was so unwell after getting that coffee from her. If she were to poison me, I would forgive her. So like, he's really not beating around the bush here. He's like, Mary, she gave me a coffee. I felt really unwell since. I think the woman's after poisoning me. A third bout of illness hit him on the 23rd of March, 1857. And this time he was so unwell that his landlady called a doctor who administered morphine. So he's walking home. He got these terrible stomach cramps. He went in and he was kind of up all night feeling really unwell. And the landlady eventually in the early hours of the morning called the doctor. Yeah. And by the morning, Emile was dead. A post-mortem showed an enormous amount of arsenic in his stomach. And when the police found the letters from Madeline, so they obviously searched his apartment, found these letters, they immediately went to Madeline Smith, arrested her and charged her with Emile's murder.
Oh my God.
Yes.
This is intense.
It is intense. And there's so many weird twists to the story. So basically the evidence they had against her was the primary thing. Was of course Emile had died from arsenic poisoning. So that had been established.
Yeah.
And after his death, her letters had been found, which again obviously points to motive because she was engaged to somebody else. And the, you know, the letters were very incriminating. But more than that, in the course of the police investigation, Madeline confesses to this love affair. Of course, she had to, because like the letters, you know, were fairly incriminating. But also the police find two pharmacists who state that they had sold Madeline arsenic, which she had signed for as M.H. Smith. Now, at the trial, she was defended by this guy called John Inglis, who would be future Lord. And he did like a really good job of defending her. So in the trial, of course, the two most positive elements in her defense were that these two chemists had said, look, we sold this woman arsenic, which would seem to be super. I mean, that is not good. Like as a defense lawyer, you're like, fuck. Like, oh this God, is not ideal. I think that's like the official legal
them,
term.
Like, yeah, it's like them being like, yeah, we sold her the exact gun and bullets that were used to kill this person. And yeah, like, oh, that's
not good at all.
Yeah, exactly.
But then, so this is a bit weird. So they testified that they colored their arsenic with soot, which apparently is a thing. So the reason they colored their arsenic with soot was to differentiate, say, the arsenic from other things you'd have lying about the house. So I guess it was like a safety thing. So they colored their arsenic and
what is arsenic used for?
I know.
Other
I was
than
the same.
To poison
like,
someone.
Why would you have it lying about your gaff? Like the only thing I could think of was maybe if you had rats or something, like if you were trying to kill an animal
which
of
she
some description.
Pharmacist.
Yeah. You'd have a lot of question marks like why on earth could you go in and just buy arsenic? But I guess it's probably up there with nowadays. In the States, why can you go into Walmart and buy a gun? Like, but I guess that's people would say defense. How is arsenic defending yourself?
I don't know if there was ever a right to bear arsenic, like in a constitution. Why? A pharmacist was like, arsenic, absolutely no problem. By the way, we color it just because if you use it at all, you will die. And then be like, yeah, but there you go. Here's your bottle. Like, you know what I mean? So
I know. It is weird. I don't know what. It seems strange that it was so freely available and people could just go in and buy arsenic willy-nilly because like,
if you're not using it to kill someone, then what are you using it for, kind of thing. For sure.
It'll kill you for sure, so much so that they have to colour it differently from other items because it will kill you. And then they're like, oh, you want a bottle? No questions asked.
And the weird thing is, like, I don't know with this arsenic, like, it must have been like powder because they said they coloured it with soot to give it a different colour so that people didn't mix it up with flour. Like, I was always presuming arsenic would be like a liquid. Like, I was thinking a bottle of Lucozade. You know, like arsenic, I always kind of visualized it in a bit of a Lucozade bottle. But no, apparently, so it was like powder form or whatever. And they colored it with soot to prevent it from, you know, being confused with other things. But then the autopsy report, they were absolutely adamant that the arsenic was clear colored in his stomach and it wasn't. Oh. So the pharmacists were saying, like, this doesn't make sense because the arsenic we use, we color it for safety purposes. Yeah. And this is not the arsenic that we sold to Madeline, which is a kind of a big question mark in the case, because obviously they're saying, like, these guys are like, oh yeah, no, like, that's not the color of the stuff we sold her. So that's like, oh, okay. That does seem to be a bit of an information gap.
Well, I think what the question is, apparently there's been so much arsenic just sold around Edinburgh that...
That's the big question.
They're just lining the streets with arsenic and they're like, well, it could be anyone's because we've got the multicolor, we got pride arsenic over here. Like, I don't know what color arsenic.
Rainbow arsenic. I love it. I guess it's kind of like, you know, they put the colors on the sheep to differentiate the different sheep. But like in Glasgow in the 19th century, it was arsenic. How do you make your arsenic stand out from the crowd?
How do you take arsenic in the morning? Is it basically the question they used to ask you every day?
For sure.
Also, I want to know, because I think it's so interesting that, like, they were doing an autopsy, which obviously they would do, but, like, in terms of where they were with autopsies back then, where does arsenic go in the bloodstream? Like, how do you know the arsenic has stayed a color? Do you know what I mean?
I know. I think, like, and I don't want to, you know, shit on 19th century autopsies, but, like, I don't know how good they would have been. Do you know that kind of way? Like,
I don't want the NRA and them coming after us on this podcast.
Okay? Just, I just want to offend one group, okay? And that, please, if you were a 19th century autopsy person, please don't get in touch. Pathologist, whatever you call yourself, please just stay out of my DMs. But no, I was questioning that as well, like with digestive systems and all the rest, because we've all had an L puke and you're looking at it and like, I didn't eat a carrot. Who's to say what happens once it gets into your digestive system?
Like, is arsenic like sweet corn where it doesn't?
Oh, stop.
It just comes out in the poo and you're like, oh, well, that black as hell. Like, I mean, come on.
I think it is the sweet corn of the chemistry world. That's its that's its official title. So Emile's valet. So he had a driver. He also said that Emile had considered, had talked to him about wanting to perhaps die by suicide as well. So that he had thrown it out there that, like, look, you know, I don't feel I have a lot to live for. He was very heartbroken over the Madeline situation. Yeah. So the driver was very much saying, like, he was not in a good space at all. The trial, of course, was like a media sensation. One thing as well, which was very important, was they felt it was crucial to the case, the chronology of certain letters from Madeline to Emile. So the letters were kind of in the apartment, but they weren't in their envelopes. So what they had done was they'd gotten the letters and put them into envelopes, but then they couldn't quite work out the chronology of the conversation because they weren't dated, the letters. So the postmarks and the envelopes were what they were using, I guess, to kind of track the conversation between the two. So they seemed to think that because the police kind of hastily put the letters in random envelopes, it affected the chronology of the conversation and they couldn't quite get a gauge as to where they were at as a couple when he died. But I mean, I feel it would be kind of obvious that, like, they obviously were not in a good place. Like, if she was like, come to Glasgow to come and meet me because, like, look, we need to talk about this. Like, they obviously were not in a good place. So I don't know how important that is, but it is something for some reason that the defense really seemed to focus on.
Well, one thing I would say is they just really need a 16-year-old girl because she'd get that shit sorted in 2 seconds.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean? She'd be like, yeah, well, he mentioned here that he was going to do this.
Oh my God, so true. So,
that, and by the way, before she was saying she kind of liked him, then this one she really likes him. So they definitely met before this. A 16-year-old girl would be on top of this, okay?
You're so right, Grace. Do you know what? It will be like a 90s thriller. She would just have them all up in chronological order straight away. Exactly. That is so fucking true. So look, it was obviously this like media sensation at the time, this trial. maybe, I mean, I don't know, is this surprising? The jury came, so at the end of the trial, the jury returned one verdict of not guilty on the first count of murder and not proven on the second count of murder. So on the so the first count was in relation to the poisoning and then not proven on the second count of murder. So basically she was free. She had essentially been found, I mean, not quite innocent, because obviously not proven is different from innocent. And there was this cloud of suspicion around her after the trial, but she was essentially free to go.
That is insane.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of circumstantial evidence there. Again, a lot of it probably related to as well, this whole thinking that like a woman could not possibly have murdered this man. Like there was probably something a bit gendered about it, but she was free to go. Now, obviously this trial was a huge scandal. Her family were forced to leave their Glasgow home and their country villa, which, I mean,
Devo.
I hate when that happens. And they had to move to a place called the Bridge of Allen in central Scotland. They moved again because obviously the story just continued to follow them. They moved to another place called Old Polmont. And it was here where her dad died in 1863, age 55, having said to have been broken by the whole affair and never really getting over the scandal itself. In 1861 then, so Madeline had met this guy called George Wardle. They had one son called Thomas and they had one daughter whose name was Mary and nicknamed Kitten, which I feel is a bit of a funny nickname. But look,
also his second name being Wardle, I was like, any relation to the game?
Oh, funny. Yeah, perhaps. Well, this is Wardle with an A, but perhaps. So Kitten, Thomas and Kitten were the two kids. And she really assimilated into London society well. She was known by her new married name. Not everyone knew who she was, but a few people did know her backstory. After many years of marriage, herself and her husband actually separated in 1889. And then Madeline moved to New York City around 1916. She married a second time to William Sheehy. And this marriage lasted until his death in 1926. She died in 1928, age 93, and she was buried under the name of Lena Sheehy. She is still, I was going to say, she's still buried. Yeah, that's kind of how burial works, Judy. She wasn't dug up.
Like just black arsenic was put over the grave. Just, you know,
oh,
I mean?
Funny. Yeah, just to mark the grave. So she's still buried. Yeah. Still buried, not dug up. Still buried in Mount Hope Cemetery in Hastings-on-Houston in New York State. So the evidence against her would have been, of course, that she very much felt threatened. She insisted that Emile should meet her. So she really wanted to meet Emile. She had bought the arsenic shortly before Emile died, which was a big thing. On the morning of his death, it turned out as well during the trial that she had left her home and traveled alone to the family summer house, which would have been seen as unusual. When her fiance caught up with her, so she went off to the summer house for a bit of alone time, which we all get, like we love a bit of alone time. Yeah. But then when he found her, she had said to him that she was ashamed of something she had done. But of course, I mean, that could have been maybe referring to the clandestine love affair herself, because she had met Emile. So maybe that's what she was referring to when she said to him, look, I'm just really ashamed of something I've done. But some people read into that, like, you know, at that stage that she poisoned Emile. Emile,
I do
then
really love as well that, like, to be super vague. Like, if I was engaged to someone and they went, I'm ashamed of something I've done, like, listen, no problem. You go off to the little summer house there. Don't tell me any more
but
details.
You'd also
can't wait to be at the altar.
I know. Like, as if you wouldn't prod them. Now, in terms of the people who would say, look, Madeline wasn't guilty of this crime. First of all, I guess he could say Emile, killing him would not have averted the scandal, because he still had the letters. So she didn't
what
get rid of the letters.
What age was she at this stage? Sorry, I just want to get a...
Oh,
what,
very good question. Been... Doing the maths
know,
on it.
You know.
1857. Okay, so she would have been 22 at that stage. Yeah.
So still, like, young enough to be stupid.
Not a girl, not yet a woman. That was definitely where she was, for sure. I feel like Britney, so underestimated in so many ways, but such, I mean, that not a girl, not yet a woman. I still feel I'm not a girl, not yet a woman.
Woman, absolutely, absolutely.
Britney, a poet of her time. We love her to bits. So also the fact that Emile's notebook, now this is maybe a bit of a stretch. So her defenders would say, well, his notebook and the letters, like, there's no, nobody ever saw them meet. So maybe this whole thing was a fantasy, which I think is a bit of a stretch. A major right. problem, though, with the whole Madeline Killingham theory is that she was recorded having bought the first dose of the poison that she used, the arsenic, after Emile's first records of feeling unwell. So he had started to feel unwell before she bought this. So that's interesting.
Also, I was about to say, because he was like documenting how he thinks he might have been poisoned and then writing a letter is the equivalent nowadays to like being poisoned and then making a TikTok about it and being like, I think it might be this person.
It's I forgive them TikTok. If it is.
So there's something weird that he was like, I'm not feeling well, think I've been poisoned. I'm going to sit down and write a little ode, little epic saga, just so everyone knows.
And I do think the funny thing
Stop
about
taking
this
coffee
fella,
from this woman is what I'd say first.
Yeah. And the funny thing about Emile was he seemed to talk about arsenic a lot. So I found this interesting. So he had read this book, The Chambers Journal, which suggests that people who dabbled in arsenic, you know, basically that like it kind of talked about like people using arsenic, and he would have mentioned to friends that he read this book, which I feel is interesting because, like, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm not watching a TikTok on arsenic. Like, it did seem to be a topic of conversation with other people in his life, this whole arsenic thing, which I feel is a bit of an oddity to the story.
So what is this book? Is it like how to use arsenic in your everyday cooking? Like, what is the... like, you know what I mean? What are people using arsenic
well,
for?
Well, so basically, which this is the kind of mad thing. So this journal kind of said it seemed to be like talking about using arsenic recreationally.
Of course.
So I mean, I've never heard of this, like using arsenic in a recreational way. But in this journal, they talked about like people who dabbled in arsenic, and they also talked about, it seemed to be kind of like a how to do arsenic book, because they also talked about the fact like if you're doing arsenic you should like mention to friends like you're doing this recreationally in case what I've written down here from this source, and I will mention the sources in the top when I do your gushy intro, Grace, but that in lest they quote lest they become implicated in murder. So to make sure and mention to your mates that this is what you're doing on the weekend in case you get implicated in murder. So again, an oddity there,
this
I feels
feel. Like what your drug dealer would say to you. Now, just to let
like
you know,
your
this
drug
MDMA
dealer
is
says,
strong. Yeah.
The drug dealer says, do not save me in your phone as drug dealer. Like that's the kind of vibe here.
Save me as David Hinge.
He did also say David Hinge, Mark Tinder. Just save me as Mark Tinder and let's be done with it. He told me, he told me, this is where I confess that I have made contact with the dead. So
this
he
is
told,
why you were saying that Madeline is definitely buried. No, she's not. She's here tonight hosting this
here
podcast.
She is. She is. She is here. She's, you can just hear her very faintly on the line there in the background, but don't worry, we'll get a mic on Madeline in a minute. He told his friends that he had wanted revenge on Madeline, and he had talked about arsenic poisoning, as I said, quite frequently, specifically with Mary Perry, who was the woman who'd introduced Madeline and Emile initially. On the night he took ill, he asked for her in the expectation that she would come, but of course she was a bit too late in coming, and because she was a little bit delayed, by then it was too late and he had died. So some people were thrown out there. Did he perhaps poison himself to get Mary to, I suppose, come to the scene?
Yeah.
A bit of attention seeking, perhaps. Yeah. But I do think, look, it's not ideal that Madeline was in a very tricky situation with this guy. She had gone to a chemist to buy arsenic. Okay, they're saying that was not the arsenic we gave her. But like it is, it's a very coincidental situation.
I find this mental, right? That he was very interested in arsenic, essentially had a book on like how to make arsenic a part of your daily life, because why not? You know what I mean? And then she bought arsenic, but after he was saying that,
isn't
he
it weird?
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a different colored arsenic, because obviously the arsenic he wanted arsenic that looked exclusively like flour that you'd use in a cake. And you know what I mean?
Like, I love working with flair.
Now it's Nadine Coyle who we think did it. But yeah, this now, this is weird because this does make me think she didn't do it.
She did have a motive, but what I will say is I didn't realize the 1830s were just like sponsored by arsenic. Do you know what I mean? At the same time, it seemed that so much was fucking flowing the streets.
Do you know what? Don't knock it. If you have a wedding coming up now, I'd really recommend it. Do you remember when I did your brilliant podcast, Fat Camp Grace, I meant to talk about, do you remember the body wraps we were all using back in the noughties?
Yeah, yeah. I did a seaweed body wrap.
Oh, did I what? Yeah. I still wonder I don't own a home. I just spent all my money on arsenic and seaweed body wraps.
In saying that, I will say that if in the early noughties, arsenic had been one of the top tips to lose weight, and by lose weight, I mean lose your life, so weight doesn't matter, I would have probably done it. Because I would have been like, oh my God, apparently you lose like 2 inches.
Well, I think a real incentive to have a child is the fact that the breastfeeding, that weight just falls off. You can be eating an M&M bar every single day. Do you know the big M&M bars? I must have been on 2 of those bad boys a day.
I love that you go for M&M bars.
Oh, have M&M's you had them?
Somehow are so much better.
Oh, like, no, sorry. The M&M bars. Oh, my God, they're fab. And they're only the family size. And I like had one when I was pregnant and I went in. They were like, you have gestational diabetes. I'm like, it's because of the M&M. Like the second I gave birth, Ted wasn't even out of me. And like he was just crowning. And I just said to Fred, the M&M bars. Like,
get it now.
That is what gave me gestational diabetes. But I still love it.
Well, in the 1830s, if you went in pregnant, apparently they were just like giving you arsenic. They were just like, here,
oh yeah,
go for the baby.
It's it was the equivalent as was the equivalent of pseudo cream, I feel, back in the 1830s. Grace, it's been an absolute pleasure. That is the story of Madeline Smith. If we are looking for you, where can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram, Grace Mulvey Comedy, TikTok, all Grindr, LinkedIn, you know yourself, all the spots.
All the spots.
As Judy mentioned, I do a podcast called Fad Camp and it's a comedy anti-diet podcast. You can find me there as well.
Grace, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.